The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, if you want to know what it looks like to see a team completely quit on their shitty-ass coach, just turn to last night's Thursday night football game and you will see that. So it was the Los Angeles Chargers versus the Las Vegas Raiders last night. But I'm not sure the Chargers were aware that they had a game last night, because at halftime, now last week, the Raiders couldn't manage to score 1 point. They lost 3-0 to Minnesota last week. So there's no way the Raiders should be, you know, blowing anybody out of the water, right? Well, at halftime last night, the Chargers were down 42-0. Yeah, that's right. I'll say that again. The Chargers were down to the Las Vegas Raiders, a team that scored 0 points last week, 42-0. I mean, the Raiders were scoring on every single possession, and it wasn't just offense that was scoring. Their defense was making some big-ass plays, too. I mean, it was an annihilation, and the Chargers looked like shit. And even, it was hilarious, too, because at halftime, Richard Sherman I think the Chargers need to set a precedent here and fire their coach at halftime. I couldn't agree more. He unfortunately did not get fired at halftime. They waited until today to finally fire Brandon Staley's dumbass. But the Chargers were down 42-0. Well, the final score ended up being 63-21. Yeah. 63. That is the most points the Las Vegas Raiders have ever scored in their entire history of the Raiders. Whether they were in Oakland, Los Angeles, or Vegas, that is the most points. The Raiders have been around for a long-ass time, too. This is a historic franchise we're talking about. And they've had excellent teams. They've won Super Bowls. They used to be the team. They've never scored 63 points in a game, and this shit team just scored 63 points last night, and the Chargers were real lucky to even score the 21 points. That's what we call, like, garbage time, 21 points they got. But Aiden O'Connell, the quarterback for the Raiders, he had a night. He went 20 for 34, 248 yards and 4 touchdowns. Those touchdowns came in the first half. Devontae Adams had an amazing game, 101 yards and 1 touchdown. Now, pretty much every receiver they had last night scored a touchdown. Also, like I said, the defense had a night as well. They scored 2 touchdowns, 1 fumble return and 1 interception return. Both of them were crazy. And then Brandon Staley was officially, finally fired as of today. I don't know how they even let his ass back on the plane last night after that game. I assumed his ass was getting fired today. I've been saying he should be fired for a long-ass time, just because he is not coach material. When he speaks, I don't know how anybody could respect him, because he just sounds like a fucking little bitch when he talks. He just has no train of thought, and he's just not believable. And you could just tell this Chargers team was not feeling it last night. Now, granted, they did lose Justin Herbert, so it's not like they even really, and, you know, Keenan Allen was injured as well, so it's not like they had all of their full force in there, but come on, man. They did not show up, and that was just a terrible game. But about time Brandon Staley was fired, because, you know, the previous coach before Brandon Staley was Anthony Lynn. If you don't know who Anthony Lynn is, he was a black man. He actually used to play running back in the league, so he was a very well-respected dude throughout the league. They gave him like 5 minutes to coach the team, and he did a pretty decent job. Obviously, he didn't win them any type of Super Bowl, but I think they gave him, what, two seasons? One season? They barely gave him any time to fucking do anything, and then they fired his ass and said, get the hell out of here, black dude. Brandon Staley, the white guy, got all the fucking time in the world, and that's personally why I was really saying, this guy needs to get fired, because they barely gave Anthony Lynn any fucking time. So, let the white, give the same courtesy to the stupid, shitty white dude, too, because he did a worse job than Anthony Lynn. So, that was just a terrible showing, and it's about time that Brandon Staley's gone. And we'll see what the Chargers are able to do with what they do in the offseason. But obviously, last night's showing was a complete and utter embarrassment, and that was just straight-up pathetic-ass football from the Los Angeles Chargers. But peace out, Brandon Staley. And hey, shout-out to the Raiders for because they're still in the playoff hunt. I don't think they're going to be a team that really makes any noise, but they're still in the playoff hunt. So that was a big game from them, a big showing, especially with what they did the previous week by not even scoring a point. So let's move on to the rest of the week 15. Jesus Christ, there is a fucking siren going by, loud ass. I don't know if y'all can hear that shit. One of my dogs is kind of looking out the window like she wants to bark, so if that's what you, if you hear my dog going crazy, that's because she's going to bark, but I'm kind of giving her a look like, don't you fucking dare bark, and she just put her head down, so hopefully that bitch ain't going to bark, but it's possible she might. Anyways, let's move on to the rest of week 15 and see what we got going on here. So first of all, my head-to-head matchup between the homie Simon Ruvalcaba, I extended my lead one more game. I went 7-8 last week. He went 6-9. 6-9. So that bumped me up to 132 wins and 76 losses, and he's got 124 wins and 84 losses on the season. So both of us start the week 1-0 because we both picked the Raiders last night. We did not expect them to score 63 points, though. I had the Raiders winning 20-10, and he had the Raiders winning 23-20. So we both thought it was going to be a little bit more of a low-scoring affair, but it most certainly was not. So let's get into the rest of Week 15 and see what the both of us believe, what the both of us think is going to happen in Week 15. This is the start of the season. No more college football on Saturday. So what do we get on Saturdays? NFL football. So we have us three games on Saturday, and then we had, so it's a full slate of football on Saturday, full slate of football on Sunday, and then of course we get Monday Night Football. So here's what we got on Saturday, beginning with the Minnesota Vikings at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now the Bengals are a 3.5-point favorite, and the Bengals, you know, they've been looking pretty good under now that their backup quarterback has finally started to get his feet underneath him. The Bengals aren't looking too bad. You know, they do have a lot of weapons for him to choose from offensively, and he seems to be using them wisely. The Vikings, on the other hand, they are now going to be on their fourth quarterback of the season. So we'll see what happens with that. It seems like Justin Jefferson is going to be playing this game, but to be honest, I don't think it really matters. You know, the Bengals, they look like they seem to be playing better than the Vikings. The Vikings have been just up and down, and, you know, last week all they could muster up was 3 points. So it was really not a good showing from them last week. So I don't expect much from them this week. And so I have the Bengals winning this one 27-14, and Simon also has the Bengals winning this one 27-17. Then we have the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Indianapolis Colts. Currently, the Colts are a 2.5-point favorite. Now, historically, the Steelers own the Colts. I think they've beat the Colts the last 10 times they faced off against each other. So the Steelers do have that going for them. But other than that, the Steelers are a garbage-ass team this year. And they have just been getting walloped these last couple of weeks. So you think they would bounce back, but I don't think they're going to bounce back. The Colts are coming off of a loss last week, so I kind of feel like they're going to put it together this week and just get it going, and I've got the Colts winning this one easily 28-10 because the Steelers have shown me nothing offensively. They are just not a good team. Defensively, they're really good, but I mean, they're starting to just, you know, fall apart, and every week it kind of feels like The receivers are throwing temper tantrums out loud too. This isn't shit that they're holding back in the locker room. It's like lots of stuff is starting to seep out with the Steelers, whereas the Colts, they seem to be all in on what they are. They're just a team that's very Jekyll and Hyde. But I expect them to get the win this week, and I've got the Colts winning 28-10. And Simon has this is one where we're disagreeing. He's got the Steelers winning a close one, 22-21. Now, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Steelers, you know, have a bounce back this week, but they just aren't doing well at all. And I kind of had the feeling the Steelers were going to start to fall off towards the end of the season. I didn't really see them as a playoff team, and I still don't see them as a playoff team. And the last game we have on Saturday is going to be the Denver Broncos at the Detroit Lions. Currently, the Lions are a 3.5-point favorite. I expect this to actually be a pretty good game. The Broncos are really starting to get going. Defensively, they're really good, and that could be a problem for Detroit because Detroit is starting to show some cracks. They have had their moments, but they've also had their bad moments. And this Denver team's really hot. And so I just kind of see the two of these teams, they're headed at the opposite directions. But Detroit is too good, in my opinion, to really keep on losing right now. And so I do have Detroit winning a close one. I do actually think this is going to be an offensive shootout between Goff and Wilson. And I do have Detroit eking out this one, 30-27. I feel like we're going to have like a last-minute type drive here, and it's just going to be Detroit's going to be the last one with the ball, and they're going to end up scoring at the end. Looks like Simon is kind of going with the same idea that I have. He's got Detroit winning as well, 31-24. So let's move on to Sunday's games. First matchup we have is the Chicago Bears at the Cleveland Browns. Currently, the Browns are a 3.5-point favorite. We've got Joe Flacco. He's had these last two games where he's just come straight off the couch, and he's been blasting defenses left and right. It looks like he's been on this Cleveland Browns team for a few years now, but he's delivering balls like he's been playing all season, and he looks really good. Now, he can fall off. Wouldn't be surprised if he did. But the Bears are not a good team. It's really not in their best interest to really keep winning. I'm sure they do. I'm sure the players want to keep winning. But, I mean, the front office is probably kind of like, yes, we know Carolina's playing terrible, and they're going to give us probably the first pick in the draft this year, so that's cool. But, you know, Chicago is just wanting to keep that top pick, and they're just also not a very good team. Whereas Cleveland's got a really good defense. Offensively, they're really starting to get it going. So I have Cleveland winning a close one, 21-14. This is another disagreement between Simon and I. He's got Chicago winning a close one, 24-20. Then we have the Kansas City Chiefs at the New England Patriots. Right now, the Chiefs are a 10.5-point favorite. New England just keeps getting more and more embarrassing offensively as the season wears on. And the Chiefs, they have shown their cracks. They really just have not gotten it going offensively. So if they're going to get it going against any team, this is probably going to be the team to get it going against. I do have them dominating this game 28-10 just because New England's not good. There is nothing good going on in this with this team. We also heard this week that it sounds like the Patriots and Bill Belichick are going to part ways. Now, it's not confirmed, of course, but now that the story's been chugging along for the last couple of weeks, and it really started to get loud, and it's getting loud in the New England circles. Not the rumor circles, but the New England circles. And so it's starting to sound like this is going to be the end of Bill Belichick with the Patriots. And so I just kind of feel like this game is not going to be good, just like the majority of the games haven't been for the Patriots. So I've got the Chiefs rolling 28-10, and Simon also has the Chiefs rolling 31-13. Then we have the Atlanta Falcons at the Carolina Panthers. Right now, the Falcons are a 3.5-point favorite. You know, the Panthers haven't been able to get anything going at all offensively, but they don't have a lot of offense to go with. I mean, they don't really have any good receivers beyond Thielen. They don't really have a ground attack. The offensive line's not good. And then defensively, they're starting to get injured. They are good defensively, but the injuries are just starting to pile up. But they do have fight in them. And it's not like they're getting their asses kicked in every single game. And it's not like the Falcons are a really good team. The Falcons have been up and down all season, and they're not good on the road. So I'm going with Carolina in a close one. 23-21. I feel like we got a division matchup here. Two terrible teams. So I feel like this is going to be a good game. So I'm going Carolina 23-21. I'm kind of shocked here because Simon is a Carolina Panthers fan. I thought he was going with his team in this one. No, he is going with Atlanta. What's up, Simon? You going against your team this week? Are you just trying to catch up? Is that what the deal is? I don't know. But he's going with Atlanta in this one, 20-14. Kind of surprised there because Atlanta's not that good. Why not just go with your boys? But I'm going with your boys this week. So you're going to fall even further behind, Simon, because you don't believe in your squad, homie. Just remember that. Just remember that. Anyways, moving on, we've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 3.5-point favorite. They are coming off of that terrible loss last week to the Jets, of all teams. They really made little Zachary look like a really good quarterback last week. Tampa Bay has just been a really bad team this year. They started off the first month rocking and rolling, and then now they are just, ugh. They are just not good. Now they're going to Green Bay. I feel like Green Bay is coming off of this loss. They're going to put together a good game this week that just put a bad taste in their mouth. I feel like their defense actually are some really hard-ass hitters. Like, watching this Green Bay defense, they will smack you in the mouth. So I just kind of feel like that's what this game is going to be all about. I feel like the defense is going to smack Tampa Bay in the mouth. The Green Bay offense is just going to put together a nice solid game here. I do think it's going to be close because Tampa does have some fight in them. But I've got Green Bay winning a close one, 24-20. And Simon also has Green Bay winning a close one, 27-24. Then we have the Houston Texans at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Titans are a 2.5-point favorite. They're coming off of this big win they got over the Miami Dolphins on Monday night. And the Houston Texans, it's looking like more and more like C.J. Stroud is not going to play. It doesn't look like he's come out of concussion protocol just yet. And so when it's Friday, usually if you are not out of concussion protocol, you are not going to be playing. So I'm not expecting to see C.J. Stroud in this one. But overall, the Houston Texans, they do have a really good mentality. This is a division matchup. Tennessee's coming off of that big win. I feel like they're going to be feeling themselves in this one. So I've got Houston winning. Even though there's no Stroud, I'm still going to the Houston side of things. Their defense is playing well. This is a division matchup. And I'm just kind of feeling like both of these teams are, Texans are coming off of a loss. Titans are coming off of a win. I just kind of feel like the opposite's going to happen this time around. And I've got the Texans winning a close one, 24-17. And Simon also has the Texans winning a close one, 24-23. Then we have the New York Jets at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 13.5-point favorite. The Dolphins are coming off of that big loss, and we're not sure if Tyreek Hill's going to play. And if he does play, how effective is he going to be? I'm going into this game just with the Jets are not good. Yes, they played great in the second half last week, but the first half, they did not look good. And so the Jets, they're just not a good team. The Dolphins, they have a lot to fight for, playoff positioning. They still have not got their division on lockdown. Buffalo is right on their heels, believe it or not. So I feel like Miami really needs this win. They're coming off of the loss. So I've got Miami blowing out the Jets 27-13. And what do you know? Simon's also got the Miami Dolphins blowing out the Jets 27-13. So we got the same score in that one. Then we have the New York Giants at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Saints are a 6.5-point favorite. The Giants are on a little bit of a winning streak here. They're starting to feel themselves. And the Saints, they are just not what at least I thought they were going to be. I thought they'd be a much better team this year. I didn't expect them to be a Super Bowl caliber team, but I thought they'd be much better than they are. And offensively, they have not found an identity at all. And it's really starting to wear on them. You could just see the frustration boiling over between Derek Carr and a lot of the rest of the offense. So who knows if that's going to be a problem. But I just kind of feel like the Giants are not a good team at all. And the Saints, they are coming off of a pretty bad game last week. So I do have the Saints bouncing back this week and winning 23-13. And this is one disagreement that Simon and I have this week. He's got the Giants winning 27-24. So we'll see what happens there. Then the late afternoon games, we have the Washington Commanders at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Rams are a 6.5-point favorite. Washington has just been one of the worst teams in the league this year. They've actually been playing what I would refer to as forgettable football, because I've pretty much forgotten that they've existed all season long. And they're in the Cowboys division, but to me, they're not a threat to anybody. Now, they did play the Eagles well, so I am rooting for them to hopefully at least beat the Eagles in the coming weeks, because I know the Eagles have to play them, and I need the Eagles to keep losing for the Cowboys to hopefully win the division, and they got to keep winning. But Washington has been very, very forgettable. The Rams, on the other hand, they are really starting to take off offensively. Now that they are getting healthy, they got Puka Nacua playing great. You got Cooper Kupp, who's healthy, playing great. His last couple of games, he's been looking like Cooper Kupp yet again. And then they've got the rookie in the backfield, Kyren Williams, who's really playing well. Stafford still looking solid. So I've got the Rams blowing out Washington 31-10. Simon also has the Rams blowing out Washington 24-9. Then we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Arizona Cardinals. Currently, the Niners are a 13.5-point favorite. And, the Niners have been blowing everybody out. The Cardinals are terrible. So what else do you expect in this game? I expect a Niner blowout 38-20. And Simon's expecting the same thing, a Niner blowout 48-10. Then we have my Dallas Cowboys at the Buffalo Bills. Right now, the Bills are a 2.5-point favorite. I'm expecting this to be a good game. You know, the Bills are really, really fighting for their playoff lives. They definitely need the win to hold on to the wild card spot, but they are at right behind the Dolphins. And if the Dolphins keep fucking up here, Buffalo's right in line to get their division. And so Buffalo's got a lot to play for. Now, offensively, there are a lot of questions with them. Josh Allen has been a turnover machine, and they just really haven't been explosive at all. Defensively, they've really been locking it down, and the Cowboys have just been playing outstanding football the last couple of months, really. They're on a 5-game winning streak right now. Dak's playing the best football of his career right now. CD Lamb's playing the best football of his career right now. The ground attack's really starting to get going. The offensive line is actually healthy, and they are not committing any bad plays right now. They're actually playing really well. The tight end's starting to show up, and then the defense is really locking it down. And then, of course, we've got a fantastic kicker who can't miss, and then our special teams just, we're able to block punts. We're able to just do a lot of things on all three phases of the game. And then, of course, Mike McCarthy is coaching in just a stellar season from Mike McCarthy. So the Cowboys are playing great right now. But I don't expect them to blow the Bills out of the water in this one. They are going to be in Buffalo, so it might be a cold one. There might be some type of weather. I don't know what it's going to be like on Sunday, of course, but it is Buffalo and it is December. So it's going to probably be pretty goddamn cold, if anything. And the Cowboys ain't used to that shit. So I expect them to play at a little bit lower level, but I feel like the defense is going to make some plays. I think they're going to force Josh Allen into a couple of costly turnovers, and those are going to be the difference in the game. I think the offense will play good enough to just get enough scores, and I've got the Cowboys winning a close one, 27-21. And this is another disagreement between Simon and I. He has the Bills winning a close one, 23-20. Now, I would not be shocked if the Cowboys were to lose this one, because they are on a 5-game winning streak. But I do think the Cowboys are the better team. The Buffalo Bills offense really has not got going. And like I said, Josh Allen and the turnovers has been an issue. And if the Cowboys defense is just able to lock it down, get at him, and really stop this ground attack and really force Josh Allen to make all the plays, the Cowboys got a really good shot at winning this one. Then for Sunday Night Football, we have us a doozy. We have us the Baltimore Ravens at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, the Ravens are a 3.5-point favorite. The Ravens, to me, look like the best team in the AFC. The Jaguars, there are so many questions with the Jaguars. I mean, once you start believing in them, that's when they start falling off. So I don't know what to expect from this team. The Ravens, though, have been one of the most consistent teams. I do expect this, though, to be a shootout. I'm expecting this to be a shootout between Lamar Jackson and Trevor Lawrence. I don't know why. I'm just thinking this is going to be just a crazy game between two great quarterbacks. but I've got the better team winning because I think the Ravens defense is one of the best in the league. They are stout. They know how to get at the quarterback, and I believe they will make enough plays to force Trevor Lawrence into maybe a turnover or two, which is going to be the deciding factor in this one. And I have the Ravens winning a real close shootout, 31-28. And Simon disagrees with me on this one as well. He has the Jaguars winning a close one, 20-16. And then the Monday Night Football matchup we have this week, the Philadelphia Eagles at the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, the Eagles are a 4.5-point favorite. The Eagles have got smashed these last two games, so they really could use this win. Seahawks starting to really fall off, starting to show their weaknesses, and just really starting to show they're really not a team that's for real. And I think that's going to continue into this week. I think the Eagles are going to put together a good, solid game this week. We all know they're not a shit team, even me. I know they're not a shit team. I will be rooting for Seattle in this one because, like I said, I want to see the Eagles keep on losing, but I don't think that's going to happen in this one. I feel like the Eagles are going to put together a good game defensively, offensively, and I think they're going to pretty much dominate the Seahawks in this one, 28-17. And Simon also has the Eagles winning this one, 28-21. And moving on to some basketball this week, we had some good games this week, and we had some standout things that happened, and then of course we had something not so great happen this week. So let's first begin on Tuesday night. We had us a crazy-ass game between the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers, and it was a duel between LeBron James and Luka Doncic. These two were just trading barbs throughout, and especially the fourth quarter. That's when you really want to see your stars shine, and these two shined. LeBron ended up with 33 points, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds. Luka ended up with 33 points, 17 assists, and 6 rebounds. And Luka got the better of LeBron in this one. The Mavericks ended up winning a close one, 127-125. It was an insane game, and it was just crazy to watch these two just battle it out, and they were just giving it all on the court, and that's just what you want to see from the two star players of the league. You want to see a battle like that, and it was a battle. Like I said, Luka got the better of them this time, but it was a great game. The same night, Tuesday night, Draymond Green, man, he is, we'll say he's having a season. I love Draymond Green. As a matter of fact, I've mentioned it many, many times on this show how much of a fan of Draymond Green I am. But this was a very disappointing thing to see from him. So the Golden State Warriors were playing the Phoenix Suns on Tuesday night. On an inbound pass, Draymond Green ends up basically slugging Nurkic of the Phoenix Suns, and it wasn't a slap. Everybody's calling it a slap. Nah, he had a fist, and he didn't straight up punch him, but he fucking knocked his ass out. And he says it wasn't intent. There was no intent behind it, but come on, man, it was not a good look. We'll say that. I can't call intent on that shit, but it was not a good look. And we all knew a suspension was coming because, for one, Draymond already has been suspended for getting in that scuffle earlier in the season with Gobert of the Timberwolves, where he got him in a headlock, basically. So he already missed a few games for that. He's actually missed quite a bit of this season already. And, you know, throughout his career, he's been known to be the dirty player. Now, when I call you a dirty player, I've said it many times. It's not a bad thing. It is actually a badge of honor. I mean, go read about the legendary Bill Laimbeer, and we'll see who you think is a more dirty player, him or Draymond. Draymond's pretty much child's play compared to Bill Laimbeer. And many others along the way, but we're talking about Draymond right now. So we all knew a suspension was coming, and now Draymond has been suspended indefinitely. And we'll see what happens. I don't think it's going to be an entire season thing. As a matter of fact, it's probably going to be for at least probably the rest of this month. I would say definitely a couple of weeks for sure. But it was just not a good look for Draymond. And He definitely was remorseful over it, which is very rare for him. He usually doesn't apologize for those type of things. And he was. He was very remorseful over this, as he should be, because it was a straight up slug to the face. It was bad, and he definitely deserved the suspension, and we'll see when he comes back. But it's been a very tough year for the Warriors, as I thought it would be, just because I kind of felt like the dynasty was going to start to fall apart, and the dynasty is starting to fall apart. So then Wednesday night, we had us a doozy of a matchup between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. Now, it was a blowout by the Bucks, 140-126, but Giannis Antetokounmpo had a career night. He scored the most points he's ever scored in his entire career in a game, and that is 64 points. He scored one more point than the Las Vegas Raiders did last night. He scored 64 points with 14 rebounds, so he had a huge double-double. Now, that wasn't actually the story of the game, really, unfortunately. After the game, you know, since he had a career night, he wanted the game ball. Well, the Indiana Pacers decided to be really petty about this, and they took the game ball. And there was a little bit of a scuffle in the hallway on the way back to the tunnel. They ended up giving him a ball, and during his press conference, he basically said, "I don't really believe it's the game ball. It doesn't feel like it's the game ball. As a matter of fact, it feels like it's too new to be the game ball, but whatever." So what turned out to be was supposed to be a great night for Giannis turned out to be a really stupid night from the Pacers by being petty. But hey, Giannis still scored 64 points, and y'all still got trounced. Then on Thursday night, Nikola Jokic had a historic night as well. He became the first ever player to have 10 or more triple doubles in 7 consecutive seasons, because last night, in a win, a huge win for the Denver Nuggets, 124 over the Brooklyn Nets, 101, so a ass-smashing, he had a triple-double last night, 26 points, 15 rebounds, and 10 assists, so it was a huge night for him, but historically huge night for him, where he became the first ever player to have 10 or more triple-doubles in 7 consecutive seasons. That just goes to show you, not only is he fantastic as a player, but he's extremely consistent. He can do everything. And Denver Nuggets, man, they lucked out with this dude. Just because from where he came from, he was a second-round pick. He wasn't supposed to be shit. And now he's arguably the best player in the league right now. And now, let's get to a little bit of more baseball news. You know, I was pissed off that the Dodgers got Shohei Ohtani, and now I'm even more pissed off because the rich get richer. The Dodgers have officially traded for Tyler Glasnow, the starting pitcher from the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, Glasnow has had his injuries over the years, but outside of his injuries, he's actually one of the best pitchers in the league. He's a very consistent and a very good pitcher, so the Dodgers just got even better by trading for Tyler Glasnow. And I am fucking pissed off about it. And I'm sick and tired of the Dodgers just getting better and better every single year. But you know what? They still don't win championships. But that's the moves they've made so far this offseason. It's kind of hard to argue against what they are doing. But it really, really fucking pisses me off. All right, now let's get to this week's top 5 list. I decided to do a little bit of topical since I mentioned Bill Belichick may no longer be the coach of the New England Patriots next year. I decided this week's top 5 list would be the top 5 greatest NFL coaches of all time. Because obviously Bill Belichick is 100% one of the greatest coaches of all time. It's just, where does he belong? Because there are quite a few choices that we could go with. But there's a lot of guys who changed the game. And I wouldn't necessarily say Bill Belichick changed the game in the same way some of these guys did. But it was just more Bill Belichick just understands the sport of football. He understands the rules. He understands the history of it. But he just is he just knows how to win, and that's been his thing. But it's definitely going to be weird if he actually does part ways with the Patriots. I mean, it's going to happen at some point. Obviously, he's not going to be there forever. But it doesn't sound like he's going to stop coaching, so it's going to be weird to see him on another sideline if that happens. But with that being said, I decided, you know what, let's see where Bill Belichick lands on my top five all-time list of greatest coaches of all time in the NFL. Just because, like I said, there's a lot of game changers. And I mean, it was actually kind of hard to whittle it down because for me, with coaches, it's beyond championships. Now, obviously, championships do matter to me. That is a qualifier. You have to have a championship to be considered the greatest of all time, in my opinion. So, obviously, that gives Bill that right up there. He's elevated to top five level for sure because he has six freaking rings. And he's been a part of two separate dynasties, and it's just he's held it down for a long-ass time. So that plays a part into it. But other parts of this as well is like coaching trees, meaning guys who used to be coordinators on the sideline with you, but then who also went on to have to go coach other teams as well. And that plays a part in it. And then also some of these guys, they created things in the sport that still happen to this day, meaning just like certain styles of defense or certain styles of offense, certain ways we play the game still to this day, they play a huge role in it. So this is my top five greatest NFL coaches of all time. So let's begin with number five. I have Bill Walsh at number five. He was the San Francisco 49ers head coach from 1979 to 1988. His record for that 10 years was 92 wins, 59 losses, and one tie. And then in the playoffs, he went 10-4. So that is that's an amazing record to have there for both the regular season and the playoffs. He won six division titles as the Niners coach. They went to three Super Bowls and won all three of them. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the class of 1993. He was also the NFL 100 all-time team in 2019. But really, the thing about Bill Walsh for me is he created the West Coast offense, which is one of the most revolutionary offenses at the time, and it's still used to this day. As a matter of fact, that's what the Dallas Cowboys run this season. They are running a West Coast offense. So it's still in the league today. And that says a lot because for one, that is the last time we really have added something new to the mix, like the West Coast offense, some type of different style of offense. And nobody had seen it at the time either. It was very revolutionary. And, I mean, of course it helps having Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and some of the great players that they had throughout the history of time. But, I mean, it was so revolutionary, and like I said, it's still here today. But also, the thing about Bill Walsh, his coaching tree is probably one of the deepest coaching trees you will ever find in the history of the NFL. So many great coaches spurred from him. I can't even begin to start because the coaching tree is so deep that to this day, there are still guys who... Because basically the coaching tree works like this, okay? You were a coach beneath Bill Walsh and you worked for the 49ers. Then you got a job and then you have coaches beneath you who ended up getting jobs and being successful throughout the league. So still to this day, there are guys connected to that Bill Walsh coaching tree that are still in the league and still doing well. So that really says a lot that his DNA is just all over the league still to this day. He dominated. His team was a dynasty. And not only was his team a dynasty, but he was great at drafting as well. You know, he had Joe Montana. He had Jerry Rice. He had some of the greatest players of all time, and he was one of the greatest coaches of all time. Then at number four on my top five greatest NFL coaches of all time, Don Shula. He coached the Baltimore Colts from 1963 to 1969, and then he coached the Miami Dolphins from 1970 to 1995. He had a 33-year career in which he had 328 wins, 156 losses, and six ties. His playoff record is 19-17, so when you play in that many playoff games, that's what you're going to end up with. He had 16 division titles. He appeared in 6 Super Bowls with both of the teams, by the way. He won 2 of the Super Bowls with both with the Dolphins. He's a Pro Football Hall of Fame member, class of 97, NFL 100 all-time team, and he's only ever had 2 losing seasons in his career. And he is the only coach ever to be a part of the only undefeated team ever. That was the 72 Dolphins. They went undefeated in the regular season. They went undefeated in the playoffs. And they ultimately went on to win the Super Bowl. Not only did they win the Super Bowl that year, but then their undefeated streak actually bled over into the following season. Not only would they have a good regular season, but guess what? They would go on to win the Super Bowl again. So he's won back-to-back Super Bowls. And, I mean, 16 division titles. And really, the thing about Don Shula, all he did was win. That's why he's here. That's why he's one of the greatest of all time. It took literally, this is the year that finally somebody, Bill Belichick, was able to break the winning record and surpass him. Or no, he hasn't surpassed him just yet. But regardless, Bill Belichick's right on his heels. But that's what Don Shula did. Don Shula was Bill Belichick before we had Bill Belichick. So, and he was just so successful. He was excellent at finding talent as well. He had some of the most successful quarterbacks. He not only did he coach Johnny Unitas, but he actually played with Johnny Unitas too. He had Dan Marino, Greasy, and then, of course, just that entire 72 Dolphins team was just really fantastic and phenomenal. And Don Shula, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Then at number 3 on my top 5 greatest NFL coaches of all time, Bill Belichick. Now I know you say, Katie, how is he not number 1? Because everybody, for the most part, puts him at number 1. I'm going to tell you why Bill Belichick is not number 1 for me. Because Bill Belichick actually has one of the worst coaching trees. Bill Belichick is great at winning. He is the ultimate when it comes to winning Super Bowls and growing his own team. But when it comes to putting his fingerprint and his DNA throughout the rest of the league, he never invented something like the West Coast offense or the 4-3 defense or really had that type of influence on the league. Like I said, his coaching tree is terrible too. The only coach right now from the Bill Belichick coaching tree that's even doing halfway decent is Mike Vrabel. And P.S., he's not from the coaching tree. He's just an ex-player of his. He played linebacker in the first half of the Patriots dynasty. But what Bill Belichick has done can't be disregarded. First of all, he did coach not only the New England Patriots from 2000 to now, but he also started with the Cleveland Browns 1991 to 1995. Not such a good run for him there. But in his entire career so far, his record is 300 wins, 161 losses, so that's great. His playoff record, 31-13. How great is that? He's had 17 division titles, 9 Super Bowl appearances, won 6 of those Super Bowls. He's also a part of the NFL 100 all-time team, and he's just the most winningest coach ever. I mean, he's been a part of 2 dynasties, and it's just undeniable what he's done. Yes, he is falling off of the face of the earth right now, but guess what? That's happened to a lot of great coaches throughout the history of the league. And so you can't really discredit what he's done just because of these last few seasons have just been terrible for him. But I don't have him at number 1. And I know that's going to bug a lot of people because most people put him at number 1, but it's because they're only looking at the Super Bowls. Nothing wrong with that. But for me, the top 2 guys, their DNA throughout the league, it's still here. I mean, hell, even the 2 guys previous, 4 and 5, Shula and Walsh. Like I said, Walsh still has coaches from his coaching tree in the league today. And Shula started this gangsta shit, so that's the motherfucking thanks he gets. Bill Belichick looked up to Shula, so you got to put Shula on the list. And, you know, like I said, Bill Belichick hasn't, like, revolutionized anything in the game. Really, the only thing he's revolutionized is giving you really vague answers in press conferences. So that's pretty much what he's revolutionized. But one of the greatest coaches of all time because he's a consistent winner. He has more Super Bowls than anybody, and that's really all he's done is keep winning, and keep winning, except for the last couple of seasons. Then at number 2 on my top 10 greatest NFL coaches of all time, Tom Landry. He coached the Dallas Cowboys from 1960 to 1978. In his 29-year career, he had 250 wins, 162 losses, and 6 ties. His playoff career is 20-16. 13 division titles, 5 Super Bowl appearances, won 2 of those Super Bowls, member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 1990. He was also NFL 100 all-time. In basically, the thing about Tom Landry and why he is ranked so high on my list is not because he coached the Dallas Cowboys. I know, that's what you're thinking. Katie, you only put him there because he coached the Cowboys. No, it's because his DNA still runs through the league. Did you know he invented the 4-3 defense? That's right, he invented the 4-3 defense. The reason why he invented the 4-3 defense is because he could never beat the Green Bay Packers and Vince Lombardi. And he needed, and the way Vince Lombardi ran his offense, it was through the running back. The running back, the running back, the running back. And Landry invented the 4-3 defense because he wanted, you needed more linebackers and more linemen to stop the running back. And so that's where the 4-3 defense came from. It became really prevalent throughout the league, and it's still here to this day. It's one of the most prominent defenses used to this day in the league. That's one of the reasons why he's ranked so high. Another reason why is the 4-3 defense became so good that he even needed to invent an offense to overcome the 4-3 defense because everybody in the league started using it. So that's an aspect of it. Also, Tom Landry was one of the greatest scouts of all time. He wouldn't just look for dudes who played college football. You know, God, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank on the receiver now. Not Drew Pearson. Fuck. There was somebody on the Cowboys back in the day team, was a track star. And that's where Landry found him. He was a track star. So that's kind of what Landry did, is he would find just great athletes who weren't just football players. He would look beyond football. And we got so many amazing football players historically who are current Hall of Famers because he was such an amazing scout, he himself. Then, of course, Tom Landry has 20 straight winning seasons, and that's probably going to stand forever. I mean, Bill Belichick couldn't even do that. So that says a lot. You know, also the thing about Tom Landry, too, his career started off shaky. As a matter of fact, the Cowboys pretty much sucked the first 5 seasons he was the coach. Then they started to get it going. Like I said, he couldn't overcome the Green Bay Packers and get past them. I mean, they had the famous Ice Bowl where they played in like, what, negative fucking 20 degrees, and the ground was freaking ice, and the Packers just won, you know, on this last second drive, and it was just one of the most hard-fought games. But the Cowboys could never beat the Packers, and that's why he, like I said, he created the 4-3 defense, but then he started finally getting them there. They finally got to the Super Bowl. They lost the Super Bowl. Then they won the Super Bowl. They couldn't overcome the Steelers. Then they finally did it. But then his career basically ended how Bill Belichick's career is ending. That's why I say, don't just look at what Bill Belichick's doing right now. Let's not discredit all the greatness that Bill Belichick has had, because even the great Tom Landry was fired by Jerry Jones when he took over the Cowboys. But Tom Landry is one of the most legendary figures that in the history of the NFL. His DNA is still felt throughout the league, and just one of the greatest scouts. And like I said, the 4-3 defense, we still use it to this day. Now, number one. To me, I feel like he's always got to be number one. And that's Vince Lombardi. We have this game because of Vince Lombardi. The trophy is named after him. I mean, he died while coaching still. So we don't even know what more he could have done after, you know. I mean, that's just how it is. But Vince Lombardi is just the greatest. Ah, shit. Hang on a second. Sorry about that. Doorbell rang, so I had to go get that. But anyways, back to the number one greatest coach and NFL coach of all time, Vince Lombardi. I mean, there's just nothing else to say about the guy. I mean, he is why we have what we have today in football. I mean, he's so revolutionary. His coaching tree was amazing, too. He coached some of the greatest Hall of Famers of all time. And he was just an all-around, actually, great human being when you actually read about him. So, he coached the Green Bay Packers, of course, from 1959 to 1967. He also coached the Washington Redskins only in the 1969 season because, unfortunately, he would end up dying in 1970, but we'll get there once we get there. Let's talk about his accolades, though. In his 10-year career, which is, it's just crazy to think he only had a 10-year career, but he did. But the thing about Vince Lombardi, too, is that he came right into the Packers because the Packers were a terrible organization, actually, before they hired Vince Lombardi. They were not good at all. And he came right in and he said, you know what, you have to let me be the boss and in charge of everything. I need to make all the rules. I need to call all the shots. I need to make all the signings. And they immediately saw a turnaround in this team. And it's actually the same thing with the Washington Redskins as well, too. They were not doing well. He came right in and turned them right around. And they were actually on the upside of things right before he died. So in his 10-year career, he went 96 with 96 wins, 34 losses, and 6 ties. His playoff career is 9-1. Yeah, he went 9-1 in the playoffs. Now, you also have to think about and keep in mind, back in the day, they didn't play as many games as they do now, okay? They didn't play 17 games. They would only play like 10 games in a season. And then their playoffs weren't as long as ours either. So you have to take that into account as well, because I know a lot of people want to, you know, add all the numbers up with everybody else and Bill Belichick, but Vince Lombardi was so legendary, you just, in my opinion, I don't think you could put anybody above him. But that 9-1 playoff record, that's something else right there. He also had 6 division titles and then 3 NFL championships. That's before it became the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact, because the Super Bowl did not become the Super Bowl until 66, I believe, was the first year that we had the Super Bowl. So he actually won championships, and they were a great team before it became the Super Bowl. And then, of course, they won the first 2 Super Bowls. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the class of 1971. As a matter of fact, they inducted him right after he died. He is also a member of the NFL 100 all-time team. And he never had a losing season in his entire career. So he had a total of 5 NFL championships, meaning the 3 NFL titles plus the Super Bowls. And that was all with the Packers. Like I said, with the Redskins, you don't know what would have happened because basically he was there the 1969 season. They had a solid season, looked like they were projecting to be something else. And then, of course, in 1970, I believe it was in April, he found out he had colon cancer, and then he died in September of 1970. So, I mean, it was quick. It was one of those quick type of things where he found out he had cancer, and boom. I mean, he was only in his 50s. I think he was, 52, 54, something like that when he died. So, hey, gotta say, though, he died doing what he loved, though. I mean, he went right into it, and he was He died while coaching, basically, still. But one thing that not a lot of people, which I think is very weird that they don't talk about, especially in this day and age, is Vince Lombardi was way ahead of his time when it came to discrimination. He was one of the first guys. You got to understand, when he coached the Green Bay Packers, it was in the 60s, okay? So this is like civil rights era. And there was only one black player on his team when he took over. And then after he took over, there were tons of black players on this team. And he made it very clear to all his white players, we are not going to discriminate. If I hear you discriminate against one of your guys, you call him the N-word or whatever the hell, you're off the team. He became the first to desegregate his teams, meaning he didn't separate his players when they were on the road, white guys in one room, black guys in another room. No, he intermingled them. And then also, when they were on the road, he would not stay at hotels that discriminated against blacks and would not let them in. So that was one thing. But then another thing, which I'm just always so shocked that is never anything that anybody talks about, but many gay players, yes, gay players in the 60s played for him and were out and open, at least with the team, they were out and open. Obviously, they weren't like, hey guys, gay guys here. They weren't doing that shit. But there were multiple gay guys who played for him, especially when he was with the Redskins. As a matter of fact, one of them was a tight end, I believe. I can't remember his name, but he flourished under him because he didn't care that he was gay. One of the reasons, though, why Lombardi did not care that he was gay is because Vince Lombardi's brother was gay. And so he already, you know, is his brother, and his brother was in a relationship with a man, and he had no issues with it. So he made sure to protect. He like would go out of his way to tell everybody, if you got a problem with these guys being gay, get the fuck off the team, is essentially what he would say. So it's really weird to me that they don't actually put a lot of emphasis on that, especially the gay aspect of it, because, I mean, still to this day, we don't have any openly out gay guys in sports in general, but in the NFL, we really never have. And the gay guys that have been out, they were like just crappy-ass players. It's not like we have Aaron Rodgers out or any type of marquee name who's like a good-ass player out still to this day. And to hear that he not only would protect them, but he actually would tell any guy he knew in the league who he knew was gay, he would tell them, come try out for us. I don't care if you're gay. I want you to try out for us. And if you are good, we want you on the team. So it's kind of weird that they don't really talk about what a pioneer Vince Lombardi was. So I just think Vince Lombardi was, his name's on the trophy, for Christ's sake. And just, he started this shit. He started this gangsta shit, and that's the motherfucking thanks he gets. And, you know, his playoff record, and like I said, had he not died, we don't know what the fuck he would have done. The Redskins would probably have more Super Bowls than I would want. You know what I'm saying? So, he just was the greatest coach of all time. He invented so many different ways to win. That's all he did was win. And like I said, when he took over the Packers, it was his way or the highway, and it worked out. And same with the Redskins. He walked right in and did the same exact thing, but unfortunately, he only got the one season, so we don't know what would have been. But regardless, he's left his mark on this league. Like I said, he was inducted into the into the Hall of Fame in 1971. Of course, they did that because he died in 1970. Right after he died is when they immediately renamed the Lombardi Trophy, the Super Bowl trophy, to the Lombardi Trophy. I mean, come on. His DNA still to this day runs through it. I mean, hell, his grandson is a coach. He's an assistant coach in the league, so we still have a Lombardi in the league. So to me, Vince Lombardi's always going to be number one. I don't think there's ever going to be anybody I'm ever going to put above him because, you know, Bill Belichick's got 6 Super Bowls and I didn't even put him above him. And like I said, that's just because this dude has been here forever. We still talk about him, and he's left his mark. That's for damn sure. So Vince Lombardi, always going to be number one to me. And quite frankly, Tom Landry's always going to be number two to me. And the two of them had major, major respect for each other. They actually played football with each other. And, you know, Tom Landry could never get the better of Lombardi, but that's why he invented the 4-3 defense. And that's why Vince Lombardi is the number one coach, because you always, always had to try and out-coach him, and you just really couldn't do it. So, that is my top five this week, the top five greatest NFL coaches of all time. And we'll see what happens with Bill Belichick, man. I mean, it's going to be very, very weird to see him on another sideline for sure. But it's sounding more and more like it is going to happen. All right, y'all. That was a long-ass episode because we had a lot to cover. But I love talking sports, so I could honestly keep going. But enjoy the rest of the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.